Welcome to The Source from the ATA, conversations about telehealth and virtual care from the thought leaders, experts, and visionaries who are working to change the way the world thinks about healthcare. I'm your host, Greg Matthews, and today our guest is Joe DeVivo, Chief Executive Officer of InTouch Health. Joe has a track record of success achieved over 30 years of extensive business leadership and 25 years of medical device experience, ranging from small startups to large corporations. Additionally, Joe is a member of the boards of AdvaMed, the ATA, and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, for whom he's raised over $1 million. Join us as we dive into the future of virtual care with Joe DeVivo. Joe, thanks so much for being with us today on ATA Source.
Thank you, Greg.
I have been eager to have this conversation because InTouch Health has been such a significant player in this space, and I think your perspective is going to be really valuable to our listeners. One of the things that InTouch Health is known for is this focus on virtualizing care from the inside out. And I'm wondering if you could elaborate for our listeners who may be less familiar with your work, what does that actually look like, and how has that evolved over the last several months?
Well, again, thank you, Greg, for having me, and thanks for a great question. Virtualized care from the inside out refers to virtualizing care from inside the health system out into the community. We hear so much about virtual care that's done by physicians in their homes, talking to patients in their homes. But when you have a patient who's in facility and might need a specialist that is not in that facility, the technical barriers are much higher. You know, there's so many things in our normal life that are easy to do. But the moment you go into a healthcare environment, you have a significant amount of regulatory requirements. You know, you have quality management. You have the need for security and protections. And the lack of interoperability inside healthcare systems is probably the biggest challenge. Everyone has an EMR, and regardless of which EMR they have, it's all a different instance and different environments. And so how do you, you know, it completely flies in the face of telehealth, which is about one to many, about fractionalizing physicians' time. And when each one of these hospital environments have architected a different security infrastructure, a different set of VPNs, a different EMR, and a different set of rules for data integration, it makes it very difficult to do virtual care. So what InTouch has been focusing on is helping physicians and specialists provide very needed care in many of these facilities that don't have the physicians in the locations, and doing so in a manner where that physician can get to any one of the locations that they're credentialed in with one click. And so it's a whole different type of telehealth.
And that is really interesting because we do tend, I think, especially for those of us who are not directly engaged in the industry, to simplify telehealth to a large degree as a one-to-one communication. But you're right, when you start getting into multiple potential institutions and communications inside and outside those institutions, the complexity ramps up pretty quickly. I guess I'm curious about what you're seeing now, just in terms of the ways that healthcare providers, health systems, and hospitals are thinking about telehealth in the context of the continuum of care. Obviously, it looks different today than it did even 6 months ago, but can you talk about that evolution as you see it over the last several years and months, and maybe a little bit about where you see it going post-pandemic as well?
Thank you for the question. We have been constrained by, of course, reimbursement. Regulators have been concerned about fraud and abuse, overutilization, and we have had to develop use cases that created an ROI within the current reimbursement framework. Now, this is all pre-COVID, of course. And so whether it's telestroke, where we are bringing neurologists to multiple environments, or an EICU where You have intensivists who are in multiple locations coming into an ICU to provide that type of care, or in behavioral health or in neonatology. Each of these use cases have immediate ROIs for both the hub and spoke site. There's a great economic symbiosis. But what really changes the game is when reimbursement is not dictating the clinical care, and reimbursement kind of can be equalized amongst those different types of care specialties. You speak a lot and do a lot of work in the digital health arena. And it has to do with the digital revolution in healthcare. We've had digital revolutions in other sectors. You look at the airline industry. You look at the banking industry. What really occurred that we all see is, as consumers of those industries, it created a lot of empowerment for the consumer. We can book our flight. We can choose, exactly when and where we're going to go, what our seat is, any amenities. We can have all of that managed on our phone, and we're delighted by it, where the airline didn't have to bear the cost of having someone talk you through that. And in banking, we have bill transfer, disbursements, paying bills, et cetera. All of those transactions now, when you would write a paper check, are easy to do. And I think there's a digital, when we look at this going forward, virtual care is going to help foster in the empowerment of a patient to be in control of their record, in control of their schedule, not be beholden to a physical visit. And every specialty is going to identify where are the touch points where it's not necessary to have someone in facility, in long waiting rooms that we're all very paranoid of having today. So what we're all working on is not just an audiovisual visit online. That is like that's a hair on our head compared to the whole body. What this is about creating a digital interaction in a secure environment to provide high quality care and be efficient. It's even the democratization of healthcare. Because it doesn't matter where you live with telehealth, you can bring a world-class specialist to help them and break a lot of the geographic boundaries.
Joe, I'm really curious because you've had an opportunity to see years worth of patient experiences using your telehealth platform. And I guess I'm curious, let's take ourselves pre-pandemic for a minute. How do patients in facility respond to that? How do they, what has been their reaction to the incorporation of this virtual care element into their experience in the facility?
It's really a good question. And we've actually done some studies specifically identifying that. We've fixated on that because when you start off in a critical care environment, whether it's in the ICU or in neurology, the consequences are high. The remote physician is making life-altering decisions. And that relationship between the physician and the patient has to transcend the technology. And so the patient needs to feel that physician is present. And then the physician needs to believe that they have enough data to make that decision. And so early on in InTouch's evolution, we focused on devices, because those devices, just a basic pan-tilt zoom camera is not an intimate interface. And just by putting a regular screen there, means that you could be talking to the patient, but your eyes are looking across the room versus looking them in the eye. Or the camera might be looking at them in the eye, but the face is turned other ways. So we actually developed devices where the camera and the screen were mobile and transfixed. So if I turn my neck to the left and look at someone in the eye, they see that doctor turning and looking at them. And then if there's a family member to the right, the screen robotically turns to the right and they can look at the family member in the eye. And as that occurs, as that motion and as that quality of interaction occurs, the technology melts away. And it's just
that
the patient.
That is a really fascinating point. And I guess it leads me to a follow-up question, because one of the things that I think a lot of people have been wondering about is, what are the things that physicians need to be able to do differently? Are there new skills and competencies required in a world of virtual care that they may not have focused on in their training, for example? And it sounds like in the example you just gave, some of the work that your technology has done is sort of mitigating some of those changes, right? Because it just it mimics their natural behavior. But I'm curious about your thoughts. You know, over the years, have you seen certain traits or characteristics on the part of the physicians that make them particularly effective at delivering virtual care?
Yeah, actually, you know, there is a virtual care bedside manner that's necessary. You know, instead of just talking at the screen, you know, you have to make sure that you're set up so the camera can see you well, and you spend some time looking in the camera, not just fussling with your papers, and then making sure that you see the overall environment they're in. You know, looking left, looking right, understanding who is present in the room. You know, we're working on a technology that can identify caregivers in the room. So if you go into an environment that you don't know the people personally, which happens a lot in telehealth, that you have this facial recognition that knows that that's Bill and that's Wendy and that's Jim. So you can take that control over the environment. The remote physician, even though they're remote, they're still fully responsible for the care of that patient. So they have to feel remotely that they can control the environment where that patient's being cared for, and they can be present with them. It's not a small task, and it's been studied and analyzed by InTouch for years and years and years, because if a patient doesn't feel that the doctor has the context of what they're going through, they're not going to accept the care being delivered. So the doctors have to have all the information necessary. They have to be able to understand the environment the patient's in, and then they have to connect with the patient. And it takes effort, and it takes a desire of wanting to do that. And again, once it's done effectively, the technology melts away, and all that matters is the care between the two of them.
It is really a fascinating new thing. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how telehealth plays into the future of medical training. But rather than dive into that, because that could be a whole series of podcasts, I want to get your perspective on, we're all aware that there's been an explosion in the use of telehealth over the last 2 to 3 months out of necessity due to the pandemic. I'm curious about your perspective on whether providers are going to continue to offer that as an alternative post-pandemic and what that might look like.
Well, it's a great question. And I think we're growing in belief that the reimbursement incentives to allow a physician to make the choice as to whether it's inpatient or virtual, we believe those are going to be more permanent, and we hope they'll be more permanent. The question is, what is the physician going to do? Because so much of telehealth today has been for on-demand care. InTouch will be a part of Teladoc soon, and Teladoc, you know, the global leader in on-demand care for many different specialties. And sometimes a patient wants to have that care at a particular time on demand. Physician offices aren't going to go on demand, I don't believe. And so how much of this is going to continue? Today, it's all by necessity because patients are too afraid to go into the doctor's office. But once that subsides, there's going to be a new equilibrium. And I think the physician practices are going to have a subset of the patients or certain days of the week where they're just doing clinic. When there is a logistics challenge with a patient or when there is a double booking or whatnot, offices are going to get smarter and smarter about booking virtual visits that will enable them to see more patients in a day and also help patients who have logistics issues and can't physically get into the office. But I think there's been such a rush of doctors coming into virtual care. These doctors don't understand virtual care yet. They're just doing a video conference. They're just doing a video conference. And it's going to take, once this kind of hysteria settles down, I think it's going to subside for a bit, and then it'll be a little bit more of a glide path back up as people learn how to embed this more efficiently into their practices.
Interesting. And I guess you raised this issue before, and it is one that's really pretty unavoidable in any conversation about virtual care. And that's the issue around reimbursement and other issues related to the regulatory environment. Having 50 different state departments of insurance, I'm sure, becomes challenging when you talk about virtual care. Talk to us a little bit about the regulatory environment and how you see it changing. You know, there have obviously been some changes some temporary changes, at least, in the way that regulations are being handled today. Are some of those things going to stick in your mind? Are there places where we still have work to do? Give us your perspective there.
Well, yeah, I think we have some work to do. On the payer side, I'm hoping for Medicaid, Medicare patients, private pay patients, I'm hoping there's parity between face-to-face visits and virtual visits. But the one area that is going to have to be revisited is HIPAA compliance, data encryption, security, fraud, and abuse. Many off-the-shelf technologies have been used to meet this immediate scale need and have provided a very valuable service during this time. But as health systems and physicians start planning for the future, they're going to have to ensure that if they're going to look for reimbursement for these interactions, they're going to have the appropriate records and documentations that this did occur. They're going to have to ensure that their documentation is strong enough for any type of audit of fraud and abuse. They'll have to make sure that there's integrations in the core systems to make these transactions work much easier. And they're going to have to ensure that they truly are secure and protected, where they can not only just work in a home-to-home environment, but they can work in an in-facility environment. And from a regulation standpoint, you know, I think the regulatory bodies have to look at the consequences that are associated with virtual care too, especially on where we are in stroke and critical care. Each of those areas, have to live to a certain quality standard.
It's very hard, it sounds, to flip one domino without others falling. And I guess I'm kind of curious to see where you think some of the dependencies may be. You know, you referenced interoperability as a challenge. We could even talk about physician liability, clinical liability as an issue that could potentially be a challenge. Are there some that you think are sort of must fix issues before we can fully adopt telehealth into the continuum of care?
Well, I think that's left to be seen. Right now, it's a little bit of the Wild West, and there's all different types of technologies being used in order to create these engagements. And, you know, our fear, you know, we've been in this for 18 years at InTouch.
Yep.
And our fear is, you know, someone does overutilize or a patient is harmed. The more you rely on a remote physician, especially in an urgent need, if the technology fails, is there patient harm? In the device industry, if a device fails and there's patient harm, there's a liability associated to it. Well, what's the liability when someone is relying on someone remotely? And if there's harm and consequence, what does that mean? And so my fear actually is with this dramatic adoption and utilization without real full training and integration, we just want to make sure that the quality of the experience that patients are getting are of medical grade.
Yep. And it makes tremendous sense. It's amazing how quickly this conversation is going, Joe. We're almost ready to wrap up here, but I wanted to step back before we talk about our final question and just think about sort of the overall financial and economic models around healthcare and where you see virtual care fitting into those economic models. What are some of the dominoes that may tip there? You know, are we going to have greater incentives to look at value-based care? Are we going to have fewer incentives to look at value-based care? Where do you think some of the economic outcomes may take us?
Well, it certainly is is one of the greatest proponents for value-based care. When you have a fixed cost in your system and you need to then identify ways to leverage that infrastructure, for example, the any of the employed physicians, their time is incredibly valuable. And if you don't utilize their time, it evaporates. It's kind of like the energy in a power grid. Mm-hmm. If you don't use that energy, you have to move it to another, you know, geography and then sell that energy, or else it'll dissipate because it can't be stored. In healthcare, we have a shortage of physicians. And we also have a tremendous disparity geographically. Telehealth is an incredible equalizer and democratization of healthcare to provide high quality care wherever the patient is, and to make greatest use of our most valuable assets in our physicians. And so in any value-based care environment, virtual care is going to win out because it's going to allow you to leverage your physicians. It's going to allow you to manage your patients at home. It's going to allow you to manage them at home earlier and intervene earlier than always having to come in facility into the higher cost environments. And the future is great if virtual care can be embedded into the everyday thinking of how care is delivered.
Excellent. Joe, thank you so much for being a guest on ATA Source. This has been a really fascinating conversation. When people want to know how to get in touch with you, learn more about the work that you're doing at InTouch Health, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, InTouch Health will become Teladoc Health soon. And being a public company, there's a lot of ways to learn about us. But I have, if anyone wants to reach out to me directly, LinkedIn might be the easiest and best way to do that.
Fantastic. We will make sure that there are appropriate links both to InTouch Health's website as well as LinkedIn in our show notes. Joe, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Greg.
Thanks for listening to The Source from the ATA. We want to hear from you. What topics should we cover? Who would you like to hear from? To share your comments and suggestions, and for more information about the ATA, telehealth, and virtual care, please visit our website, americantelemed.org, and our American Telemed accounts on LinkedIn and Twitter. Finally, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and share this podcast on your favorite platforms. It really makes a difference. Copyright 2020 ATA. All rights reserved.